So it's Trinity Sunday, a Sunday that strikes fear into the hearts of creatures everywhere. Famously dreaded, because it's almost impossible to describe the Trinity without accidentally committing heresy. I'm going to say at the outset that if I slip up in this regard, I'm sorry, I'm not sorry. I'm going to try not to get lost in the weeds of this mystical doctrine, because thinking about it too much makes my brain ache. How can God be one and three at the same time? How can Jesus be God and also pray to God? Where does the Holy Spirit fit in? And as if all of that isn't enough to make us dizzy, our readings today present us with yet another character, this wisdom woman from the book of Proverbs. Who is she? And what does she have to do with the Trinity? I think these are all reasonable questions. I'm afraid this sermon may not answer them. My hope and prayer, though, is that it will help us to live with them, to see these questions and others like them, not as stumbling blocks to our faith or barriers to faith, but part of a dynamic, growing, living faith. Let's take a breath and remind ourselves that all the language we use to describe God is provisional. It cannot contain the fullness of God is bigger than our imaginations, bigger than our intellects, bigger than our religion. This should not discourage us from making full use of our God-given imaginations and our intellects and the traditions and wisdom of our faith, but it should encourage us to leave some room for mystery and possibility. In the little reading we heard from John's Gospel, Jesus says to his disciples, "I still have many things to say to you. When the Spirit of truth comes, he will guide you into all the truth." I know that some people find those words deeply frustrating, but I love them. I love them because they leave room for mystery and possibility. I love them because they assure us that God has not stopped speaking yet. There is yet more truth to be discovered, and the Holy Spirit will help us in our seeking and learning and deepening and growing. I know that some of us here feel some anxiety about making affirmations of faith, or reciting creeds, or joining in with the words of hymns and prayers that make statements that we're not sure we fully understand or believe. And you know what? It's okay. I think it's healthy to know and admit that we might be wrong, and that we don't have all the finer details figured out. I wonder whether over the millennia the church has sometimes been too preoccupied with pinning faith down into authorized creeds, establishing and policing right belief, constraining and controlling the language we use. God and the Bible continually and inconveniently overspill these limitations. Faith is not an absence of doubt, nor is it static and unchanging. What God requires of us is not a systematic theology, but a wholehearted commitment to love one another and to abide in God's love. I'm not suggesting, though, that we should throw out the doctrine of the Trinity. Here's why. It gives us a picture of God who, in God's self, is love, relationship, equality, diversity, and cooperation. It reveals to us that our faith is designed to be lived out in community. Humans, made in the image of God, are made for love. We participate in the life and mission of God when we form, heal, or nurture relationships, and when we help and care for each other. God lives, moves, and breathes in the spaces between us. To be made in the image of a Trinitarian God, to my mind, says something really important about humanity. One of the creeds of the Christian Church, it's the Athanasian Creed, if you're interested, says that we worship one God in Trinity and Trinity in unity, neither confusing the persons nor dividing the divine substance. Imagine if we viewed humanity this way too. If we lived in a way that upheld the distinctiveness and dignity of every person, while also perceiving that we are inseparable, inextricably woven together, that none are free until all are free, that none can truly flourish until all can flourish. In his 1963 letter from a Birmingham jail, Martin Luther King wrote, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny." I believe this to be true, and our failure to perceive this seems to be at the root of so much that is broken in the world. In April this year, the UK Supreme Court ruled that the legal definition of a woman should be based on biological sex. This is a complex and sensitive issue, and I have had mixed feelings about it in the past. But when I saw on the news the images of the women's campaigners emerging from the court, cheering and celebrating and opening champagne, something crystallized for me. This ruling essentially says to trans women everywhere, you don't exist. It strips away hard-won rights to equality for an incredibly vulnerable and marginalized group. How can this be a victory for women? To elevate the rights and protections of some women at the expense of others is to divide our divine substance. We are tied in a single garment of destiny. In another complex and sensitive situation, which I'm afraid to speak about, conscious of my ignorance, but neither can I not speak about it. I know that it is on all our minds. Israel's war on Hamas has escalated further in these past days. The suffering inside Gaza is beyond anything I can imagine or describe. World War III seems to be looming, if not already here. And there has been rhetoric from both sides of this conflict, denying the very right to exist of those on the other side. Hamas saying, "We will not have peace or safety while Israel exists." The Israeli government declaring the same about Palestine. Its representatives even stating that there is no such thing as a Palestinian people, a Palestinian culture, or a Palestinian history. And I will say it again, to elevate the rights and protections of some of us at the expense of others of us is to divide our divine substance. We are all tied in a single garment of destiny. We need to challenge the rhetoric telling us that justice, safety, and freedom for others means less of those things for us. The voices that blame immigrants and those who are different for the problems we face. We are all made in the image of God. In all our diversity, we are woven together. We are all tied in single garments of destiny. Let's expand the vocabulary we use to speak of God, finding language that's spacious and inclusive, playful and creative. Let's be humble with our theology, open to the idea that we might be wrong, and that God has not yet finished speaking. Let's find our security, not in our own certainty, but in God's unwavering love for us, and God's promise never to abandon us. And let's do the work of loving our neighbour and our enemy, repairing relationships, bridging division, welcoming all. God is love, and when we live in love, God lives in us. May this be so.